It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about thousands of wildlife cameras to explore aspects of animal behavior normally not caught on video. Snapshot Wisconsin is a DNR effort to partner with volunteers who've set up these wildlife cameras to get a glimpse into how animals conduct themselves and behave with other wildlife. Call in any time about Snapshot Wisconsin what you wonder about this citizen science project, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Ben Zuckerberg is a professor of ecology in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Ben, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Yeah, good morning, and thank you for having me.
Good morning. And a colleague in the same department, Jonathan Polly, is here, a professor and ornithologist. Jonathan, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, Jonathan, you and Ben and your research colleagues, they have a study in the journal, the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, on nearly 800,000 wildlife encounters captured with these trail cam images. So as a research tool, how valuable are these photos?
These photos can be extremely helpful. They provide the opportunity to understand where species are, when they're active, and how they interact. And given that they're cameras, they're also something that's really accessible to the general public. It's a technique, a methodology that can be utilized not just by researchers of ecology, but also citizens of Wisconsin.
Can you give an example of that?
Well, I think this paper that we recently published looking at how organisms interact as a function of where they are relative to humans can really uncover questions that we've asked in ecology for many years. That is, specifically in these new novel landscapes that feature more and more humans and more human structures, how do species interact? How do they partition space? How do they partition time? And how is that ultimately influenced by the presence of humans and everything that comes with us?
And Ben, you know, you got these timestamped animal detections that are linked to this precise spatial locations, all from this Snapshot Wisconsin. How crucial was that raw material, that data, to your scientific study?
Yeah, it's absolutely essential in the sense, I think John did a great job of capturing this, that these cameras are capturing fairly continuous information and observations of animals. And when we do that, it's stamped with information on in terms of when that animal was observed, but also where. And so when we have information on where, we can actually combine that with information from satellite observations. So information on, let's say, land cover or urbanization. And in that way, we can actually be able to integrate these observations that are biological from the camera traps with information from the environment in terms of climate, weather, land cover, and land use, and be able to explore how some of these interactions are changing over this gradient of human disturbance here in the state.
It's just like this abundance of data that you can really dig into. And I understand that a grant from NASA helped start the project. What is NASA's interest in a network of citizen-monitored trail cameras, Jonathan?
Well, I think with Ben being the lead on that, I think I might let him tackle that.
Oh, sorry.
But I think it's, no, that's okay. But go ahead, Ben, please.
Yeah, no, that's a great. So the idea, at least the origins of this, was a really interesting collaboration between professors here at UW-Madison and managers and scientists at the Wisconsin DNR. And NASA was really important in the sense that Earth Sciences observations in terms of satellites, we oftentimes think about looking out into space, but satellites also do look to the Earth. And so there is a wealth of data that's being collected by NASA that I think we're all familiar with in terms of, say, weather, but also climate and land cover and disturbances. And so NASA is particularly interested in how we can use those observations to inform natural resource planning, conservation, and even aspects of wildlife management, things that are of societal benefit and importance.
Talking about wildlife behavior recorded by trail cameras in Wisconsin, we have UW-Madison professors of ecology Ben Zuckerberg and Jonathan Pauly. You can join in on Snapshot Wisconsin along the way, 800-642-1234. Let's dig into some of your findings, Jonathan. What do these photos show about how animals interact with each other and with humans?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that this is something that we've asked for a little while now in ecology, is trying to understand how organisms interact in this novel landscape, a novel landscape being something that they haven't really seen before, at least in evolutionary time. And that is these increasingly urbanized or altered landscapes by human hand. And so by using this large data set of all these cameras distributed across all these different places and combining them with satellite products in terms of those features of land cover, we can begin to ask questions about, well, how do they interact? When are they active and where are they active? And what this work really showed is that ultimately in high disturbed landscapes, those featuring lots of people and lots of people things, that we see that ultimately co-occurrence and kind of compression in terms of where and when organisms are active increases. So there's more co-occurrence, there's more interactions between species that we ultimately see within these human-dominated landscapes. So essentially then, we're forcing these species together. And there's a few different mechanisms that lead to that, but that these species are now interacting at greater levels within these human-altered landscapes.
And that leads to then, you know, is this because we're creating more housing developments? Is it because our cities are spreading out and animals, and we're encroaching on these more native habitats? Why is there more human and animal contact?
Yeah, and really what this work was looking at is kind of animal-to-animal interaction.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're kind of this backdrop that kind of forces these interactions to increase in frequency. And that is a really great question. Why? Well, what's the underlying mechanism? Well, on one hand, there's greater abundance of these species in these human-dominated landscapes. And the question then becomes, well, why is that? Well, previous work that our group has done has shown that there's increased food subsidies. Humans are really good at providing a lot of food to these critters. And so we provide this additional resource that can bolster these populations, especially for some species. But we should also recognize that in general, critters are pretty scared of humans. We're kind of a terrifying member of the community. And so there are efforts then to avoid interactions with us. And so some species then are kind of faced with the old adage, you know, out of the frying pan into the fire. They're going to avoid interactions with humans because we are something that is something, a species to be avoided. And by avoiding us, then there's less space and there's less time for them to try and avoid other species.
Hmm.
So by increasing those abundances of species and by us really acting as pushing other species into greater interactions, we seem to see these increased species biotic interactions occurring within human-dominated landscapes.
Something that jumped out at me, Ben, in like the first line of the study, is that human disturbance to wildlife is poorly understood. And I just was wondering, why is that? Why don't we understand our impact?
Some ways we've been studying human disturbance on animals and animal communities now for over 40 to 50, if not longer, years. And I think part of what we've been able to document is sort of at very broad scales that we can clearly influence what species are where in terms of, let's say, some species will flee disturbances, habitat loss and fragmentation can certainly simplify animal communities. I think what is less well known are some of these invisible facets of diversity, meaning how species that remain in human-modified landscapes actually interact with one another. And I think that is much less well-known.
Hmm.
And part of this sort of study that I think makes it unique is being able to look at this possibility of interactions and how those networks of interactions, almost these social networks, change along this gradient of human disturbance. One of the important aspects of this, and I think for Snapshot Wisconsin, is that you've got cameras in relatively pristine natural habitats like national parks. And what we found in most of these areas that on average, animal interactions and sort of the detections or successive detections of animals tends to be roughly about 6 days or so. When we get into really human altered habitats like farmlands and even suburban development areas, those interactions actually become much more compressed, averaging almost like 4 days. And I think when we think about that, what that means is that over, you know, months and months, we're talking about a higher likelihood, a higher frequency of interactions between, let's say, even predators and their prey or strong competitors. And as such, that really does sort of open up a whole new avenue of investigation for trying to think about what are the consequences of that for species, let's say, in terms of disease transmission or even aspects of how predators interact with their prey.
Professors Ben Zuckerberg and Jonathan Pauley in UW-Madison's Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, giving us a better sense of the research possibilities with the citizen science project called Snapshot Wisconsin. Join in with your questions about trail cameras, what they show, share your experiences. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore a study using the DNR's Snapshot Wisconsin data, this partnership program to monitor wildlife year-round with a statewide network of trail cameras on public and private lands, tens of millions of images uploaded to date. Join in with your questions about this volunteer effort. Share your experience with wildlife trail cameras, 800-642-1234. We have UW-Madison professors in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology, Ben Zuckerberg and Jonathan Pauley, who stay with us. Jonathan, what about food waste, garbage? How does the availability of that human food affect animal behavior in urban areas?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's one of the more pervasive forces that we have in these kind of altered landscapes is that we're really good at providing subsidies. We're really good at providing extra food, whether it be agricultural, whether it be food waste, whether it be intentional baiting or feeding of species. And so much so that there's actually work that has been shown that species that are really tightly associated with humans, we can think of raccoons that, you know, frequent our garbage cans, that frequent all sorts of human waste, that researchers have shown that they can consume so much human foods that they actually can become diabetic from all of the food that they're consuming.
Wow.
Within these landscapes. And more importantly, though, is not just that kind of immediate acute effect on certain individuals, but when we provide this food resource, many different organisms then cue in on it. And that then, once again, provides the opportunity for more and more interaction. If all these different species are being drawn into this calorically rich food that humans provide, whatever the ultimate source is, but from humans, we see that they begin to kind of focus in on that. And we see that not just in space and time are they overlapping, but a third fundamentally important way in which animals partition is by food resources. And previous work has shown that increasingly we're seeing overlap then in what animals eat, even if they're really, really highly competitive with one another and want to avoid one another, they're now eating similar foods, and that is from human hand. And so we're seeing then, ecologists often think of a species niche, that is their role or where they occur. And we often think that species want to partition either space, they want to avoid species in space, other species in space, or they want to avoid other species in time, or they want to avoid other species in resource or what they eat. And this body of literature is now beginning to show that especially within these human altered landscapes, that they're co-occurring more in space, they're co-occurring more in time, and they're eating more and more of the same foods. And all that means then that we're compressing species together. We're seeing more and more overlap in all those needs. And so we're seeing these outcomes of greater and greater interactions. And many of these interactions aren't necessarily good for those species involved in them. because they're interacting with, as Ben said before, their predators more frequently, or they're interacting more with their competitors more frequently. And in many instances, when you interact with a competitor, it can be pretty bad. Often competitors will try and kill one another because less of a competitor means more for me. So from all these different axes then, from time and space and food resources, we're compressing these species into more and more interactions, many of them, which can be pretty negative for those organisms involved.
Ben, what does this mean for the birds? You know, as an ornithologist, what birds and bird behavior have been caught on Wisconsin trail cameras, and what can you take away?
Yeah, I can probably take that one. I would say that snapshot Wisconsin data really does, I'd say probably the vast majority of these sort of species that are captured tend to be mammals, you know, primarily because they're kind of walking in front of cameras and they kind of trigger those cameras. And so what we're kind of really looking at in terms of these encounters tend to be primarily mammals. That being said, you know, we definitely do get a lot of information on turkeys and cranes, some of the larger bodied birds. And what we're seeing is that indeed, like in many cases, we are seeing these interactions, sort of these co-occurrences between turkeys and other species, you know, actually increasing in these human areas. And as John was mentioning, the mechanisms behind that, are they being attracted, let's say, to certain resources? Maybe they're kind of using waste grain, maybe they're kind of using these supplemental food sources, and that may be more prevalent in these human disturbed landscapes. We're not entirely sure. But what we have seen with other studies is that even aspects like bird feeding, being able to kind of have food available to species, let's say in our own backyard, absolutely does have an effect on sort of the community of birds. It changes their sort of composition, their abundance, and can even affect things like their survival and their ability to survive the winter.
Talking about wildlife behavior recorded by trail cameras and the ensuing research on that, UW-Madison professors of ecology Ben Zuckerberg there and Jonathan Pauly. Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Jonathan, what are the most interesting wildlife interactions that have been captured on Wisconsin trail cameras? What did you fancy?
Yeah, I mean, that's the amazing thing. When you have this, you know, wealth of photographs, regardless of, you know, what the project is, you do have this kind of, you know, eye in the sky that enables you to see all sorts of interactions, right? Interactions between the same species, interactions between different species. It's not uncommon to witness predation events on trail cameras. It's not uncommon to see social behaviors of the same species, you know, occurring at these places. So they really do give us this insight into some of these, you know, these neat behaviors that organisms are exhibiting all the time. But through the distribution of these remote trail cameras, they really kind of give us a window into being able to witness some of those.
Ben, any images that stuck with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fun part of this kind of research is being able to do the analysis and working with students, and then they come to you with like a really neat photo. And like, you know, so for example, you know, the parade of a crane and several turkeys in one photos, you know, that always sort of elicits the imagination, or some sort of interaction between a deer and a bobcat or a deer and a possum. You know, it kind of starts these sort of questions about what is going on in this picture. So it really is a sort of very candid perspective into sort of this world that we oftentimes don't have access to.
I was gonna say, like cat video, like kitten videos, everything has to stop. We got to look at this for a second. I'll research, right. Put on hold. Oh dear. What more can trail cameras teach people about the natural world? Where does the research go from here, Jonathan?
Well, I think this does open all sorts of interesting questions in terms of what do these interactions ultimately mean? And I think that that's one of the really exciting pieces of it, is that, you know, it clearly shows that we're witnessing really novel interactions within these novel landscapes. And as an ecologist, then that's exciting to think about, is that many of the ideas that we've cultivated you know, maybe from more pristine or wild places, do they translate? Do they transfer back over to these novel landscapes that have been sculpted by human hand? And so I think digging into, beginning to compare and ask questions about, you know, ultimately what does increased compression in space and time and resources mean for the structure of animal communities and the dynamics of those communities is something that I think trail cameras really could have an important role in uncovering.
Well, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben Zuckerberg and Jonathan Polly, professors in the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. Still more conversation ahead on Snapshot Wisconsin 800-642-1234. We've got the DNR. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's called Snapshot Wisconsin. Volunteers set up and monitor thousands of trail cameras, which take photos of wildlife that pass by. And these photos are contributing to an extensive database at the DNR, providing crucial wildlife data over large areas and in all seasons. Join in by calling with your questions about these images. Share your trail cam stories, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jennifer Stenglein is a research scientist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Jennifer, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. It's great to be here.
Well, take us into your history, your association with the Snapshot Wisconsin program.
Yeah, I've been involved with Snapshot Wisconsin since the very beginning, back in the early days of 2014, when the project was just an idea and a collaboration with University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our colleague Ben Zuckerberg was part of that, who we heard from earlier, and NASA. And it was just an idea to put these cameras all across the state and have volunteers helping us get the public involved in science to generate data from all across Wisconsin that could be used for DNR's wildlife decision support needs, but also to just further science and our understanding of wildlife.
So 8 or so years later, how has the program evolved? And, you know, what do you feel like it's been a worthwhile program?
Yes, it's just incredible to see where we are 8 years later. The project went statewide in 2018. That's already 5 or so years ago. Now we have almost 1,800 volunteers that are monitoring over 2,000 trail cameras, and we have collected over 74 million photos. It's just been a huge success and a huge collaboration with the public and with people from all across the world who are helping us classify photos. So the data go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so in the classification of these photos, and as you accrue these tens of millions of photos, how does it connect with the work inside the DNR? These photos submitted by the trail camera operators, how does that inform DNR management decisions on wildlife?
Yeah, I mean, one of the key pieces to all those photos is getting them classified. That's a first step. And that is done by people. That's a really incredible effort. The folks that volunteer to have trail cameras that they monitor, they help with that classification. And also people from around the world help with that classification on our crowdsourcing site, snapshotwisconsin.org. And getting those photos classified to understand what species are in those photos, how many of each species, and sometimes even other categories, like if for deer, if there are young deer in the photos, fawns, or antler deer in the photo, which would be bucks. We get all that information from the photos to get them classified. And once we have those classifications, we can create metrics or create trends from that information. So one example is getting fawn to doe ratios for deer. And so the photos of deer, we can look at how many fawns and how many does are in the photo and create a ratio, just most simply dividing the fawns by the does after we do some math and aggregation and things. And that gives us an understanding of deer recruitment, so how the deer population is producing that year. And then we can calculate that same metric year after year to develop trends to see if there are changes in that metric.
Have there been changes in that metric, the example that you bring here?
Yeah, that's a good question. That metric has stayed pretty stable, and it's able to show us the patterns that we'd expect. And those patterns are generally there's lower recruitment in the forested areas of the state and higher recruitment in the farmland areas of the state. And that information has stayed pretty stable. After more severe winters, we tend to see a reduction in that metric. And the trail camera data has helped us to see those same trends.
Are there patterns in trail cam data that have caused you pause, that have fluctuated over the years that you are investigating further?
I would say not yet. We have 5 years of data, and so we have a great eye out there on the landscape, and we'll keep collecting that information. A lot of what we are doing is thinking of long-term trends, and having 5 years of data is still incredible, but it's not kind of enough, I guess, to think of really changes over a longer term. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So we've definitely set the groundwork to have a great data collection process in place to start collecting these metrics every year, start reporting those metrics. But time will tell how these wildlife populations are doing according to our trail camera grid.
It's really something to marvel that this is, you know, processing these images is 100% the eye of humans. I mean, this is really crowdsourcing this type of data. Can you explain a little bit about the process these volunteers go through on these trail images and the Zooniverse platform and how that works?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I mean, we call our project people-powered research, and it truly is, from the folks setting up the trail cameras to those classifying them all along the way. It has to do with people volunteering their time to contribute to this project and contribute to science. Also, a term that we use is human vision. Our project is 100% human vision because we have humans actually looking at the photos instead of computers. And humans are better at doing this, but it's just incredible we have enough folks out there who are willing to help to make that possible. So yes, we have people that are helping to set up trail cameras, and they check them about once every 3 months and upload the photos, and then they see their own photos back on their personalized website. Those are people in Wisconsin that are contributing to the project, and then they can classify those photos. Some of the photos that are trickier to classify or some that might not get classified go to our crowdsourcing site, and that's on Zooniverse. That's been a collaboration since the beginning of the project as well. That's at snapshotwisconsin.org. And people from around the world then can classify the photos. And the crowdsourcing idea is a photo is shown and multiple people will tell us what's in that photo. And there then ends up being a consensus, or if there's no consensus, then that photo is still kind of taken down and retired. And we know it's one that we might not ever know what's in it, or we might need a couple of experts to look at that photo.
Talking about the DNR's Snapshot Wisconsin Trail Camera Program with DNR research scientist Jennifer Stenglein, you can join in along the way, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So curious to ask you, what are some of the most interesting wildlife photos that have stuck with you in this project, things that you've seen through these images that are uploaded?
Yes, that is by far one of the best parts of this project. It's just seeing all of those cool pictures come in. Well, my all-time favorite is a picture of 8 otters running down this grassy lane. And it's just unbelievable to see so many otters together. You just wonder what they're doing. There's no water in the picture. There's probably water nearby, but that was a very unexpected photo. And we got it in the very first year of the project in 2015, when we just had 2 cameras open. And that just really opened my mind to like how huge this project was going to be and what cool things we were going to see.
And you start, you know, that being the first year, the trail camera program started also by estimating the population of elk in Wisconsin. Can you explain a little bit about the evolution and the changing distribution of these, you know, species of animals and what has happened to them?
Yeah, the elk population back in 2015 was going through some changes because the DNR was partnering with Kentucky to bring some elk from Kentucky into Wisconsin to help bolster the population and add a new area for a new subpopulation of elk. So that was a good time for us at Snapshot Wisconsin to get some cameras out there on the landscape. We put a denser grid of cameras, so more cameras than we would typically have in an area in these elk regions of Wisconsin. There's 3 of them now. And that was a way for us to see the elk population. And those are some of my favorite photos too, the photos of these big bull elk wandering slowly in front of the camera. They are just such big bodied animals. It's really incredible to see them on these photos. And by seeing those bull elk and all of the elk, that gives us the data to make population estimates, but also to identify the unique bulls that are in those different study areas. And that information then is used by the Elk Advisory Committee at the DNR to help make management decisions around elk each year.
As you talk, it just makes me, you know, think about how granular you can get with this data. It's almost like there's so much you can parse here with what is coming in from raw images.
Absolutely. I mean, the real power of this data set is that we have a time and date stamp and the location of all of these photos. And so when you get a species on a photo, you know where and when it was. And that just gives you so much information. It's as if we have, you know, 2,000 people out on the landscape looking straight ahead and telling us everything that they see. And this is, of course, a shortcut to that. But yeah, it does provide just a wealth of information.
DNR research scientist Jennifer Stenglein works on the Snapshot Wisconsin Trail Camera Project for monitoring wildlife in our state. Still time to join in with your questions for the DNR. Share what you've learned by observing the movements of wild animals in nature. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The main goal of Snapshot Wisconsin is to gather wildlife data using citizen science. We explore the future of setting up these trail cameras, monitoring them. Still time to call in with your questions, 800-642-1234. We have DNR research scientist Jennifer Stenglein, who stays with us. Jennifer, we heard from Matt in Madison, wrote in to say that they installed several trail cams on 48 acres in rural Bayfield County for 15 years. Matt's experience, and says, although anecdotal, was a retreat of many species that were over time replaced with white-tailed deer. The last wolf Matt caught on a game cam was the year before wolf hunting was allowed. Matt says, my trail cam photos and the incredible amount of wolf signs was replaced by packs of dogs crisscrossing our land, chasing wolf and bear at all hours. And even in remote Wisconsin, Matt says, our ecosystems are collapsing at an alarming rate. What are your observations from what Matt is saying here?
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible to have data collected over 15 years on the same property. That's a real impressive effort, and that's the sort of long-term trend that Snapshot Wisconsin is trying for as well. We're about 5 years in, so we'll see where we're at in 15 years. Yeah, I mean, monitoring a property like that, again, like it's trail cameras are a great way to do that. One of the real benefits of Snapshot Wisconsin, though, is we do get a statewide perspective instead of just a one property or one smaller landscape. So we are thinking about trends at a bigger scale, probably than what Matt is looking at. And yep, those changes can definitely happen in animal communities. And when it's on a smaller scale, though, it can be difficult to interpret what that means for the larger population. So that's what Snapshot Wisconsin is aiming to do.
How can people get involved in the program?
Yes, there are great ways to get involved. One is to help us classify photos, to see some of those awesome photos that are coming in from volunteers. And that would be on our crowdsourcing website. It's easy, it's snapshotwisconsin.org. And that is a place to look at photos and help classify them. We also are still taking enrollment for people who are interested in putting up one of these Snapshot Wisconsin cameras. So you can find that information on our website at dnr.wi.gov, keyword Snapshot Wisconsin, and that's the place to sign up. I will say, though, we're behind in enrolling new volunteers because of supply chain issues and getting more trail cameras. So there is a wait on that. But if you are interested and you think you have a good spot, check that out too.
Yeah. When someone applies to host a trail camera, what do you take into account? What do you consider as to whether accept that location, that application, or to forego it?
Yep. So we think of a few things. One is just the distribution of cameras across the state. We've divided the state into more than 6,000 little parcels that we call survey blocks, and we're looking to have a trail camera in each of those survey blocks, or at least not to have replicates in survey blocks. So the first thing we're looking for is just if there's no trail cameras in the spot that somebody is suggesting to put one. And then we also are looking for an area that's a big enough piece of land, and we have a 10-acre cutoff. It can be private or public land, but we do want to make sure that it is a big enough parcel of land that there's going to be limited human influence. So we don't want, these just in the middle of a town.
How often do the volunteers check their cameras?
From every 1 to 3 months, I'd say is pretty typical. We ask people to check it at least every 3 months, and our volunteers are incredible at getting out there and doing that even throughout the winter months.
Let's take another call here. Linda in Pewaukee. Linda, hi, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. My question was, how often does the data that's gathered from the trail cams translate into policy? And I'll give a quick example, which would be the bear baiting of 180 days. Trail cams have shown that wolves visit the bait stations for the donuts and the goodies. Many other animals that are mixing, overlapping, as was discussed earlier. Citizen resolutions have proposed limiting the baiting period from 180 days to something more normal, like 20 some days, and these resolutions have been rejected. So with the evidence on the trail cam that there is all of this mixing of species for 180 days of the year.
And Linda, I want to just pause right there to allow Jennifer to respond how this camera data translates into policy. And Linda, they're bringing up the issue with baiting.
Yeah, thanks for that question and observation, Linda. The way that the snapshot data has been used is to help create metrics to understand trends in our different wildlife populations. There are no cameras near baiting, Snapshot Wisconsin cameras, on purpose, because we want to make sure that animals are behaving as naturally as possible. So Snapshot Wisconsin can't speak to that specific example about bear baiting. But Snapshot Wisconsin has been able to create these annual metrics like the fawn to doe ratio I mentioned before, or indices to abundance, we call them. So they're ways to track population trend through time and through space. And we have those metrics for bobcat and fisher. And those are the sorts of info we're continuing to produce from Snapshot.
Linda, thanks so much for calling in. Jennifer, how does the DNR address privacy concerns associated with these cameras?
Yes, good question. We are not interested in pictures of people on Snapshot Wisconsin. And so the people are filtered out of the data set. Oftentimes the people that are on photos are the actual volunteers, and they mark their own human photos when they go to review them on their personalized website. So the questions about people are just kind of taken out of Snapshot Wisconsin by removing those human photos. And also we do protect the location of the photos and the trail cameras. People can see the county from which a photo came from, but not the particular location, unless this is a research study or an application that we need to work on for, you know, decision support.
You mentioned the backlog on these trail cams with supply chain issues. Can people use commercially available trail cameras for this project?
So unfortunately, we cannot incorporate other cameras into our project. There's a whole host of IT reasons why that's so. The photos have to be a very specific thing from one specific camera that's actually made particularly for Snapshot Wisconsin to enter our system. We are working with about 1 million photos a month coming in.
Wow.
So it's just a really big level that is particular to our system, but people can certainly use their own trail cameras to see what's on their land, and that's a really exciting project for folks too.
In our last moments together, what does this project tell you about citizen science and about crowdsourcing data?
Yeah, I mean, that is, it's so exciting to see how Snapshot Wisconsin has grown because of people-powered research. It just wouldn't exist without the people that make it happen, the thousands of volunteers. Last I checked, there were close to 18,000 people who have made classifications for us on our Zooniverse website too. So it's just very exciting to see how people can come together to collect data, and these data can help inform decisions within DNR. But like we saw in the research we heard earlier in the hour, they can also help inform bigger questions about wildlife and wildlife interactions. Hats off to all the people who are helping us do this.
Jennifer, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's been very fun.
Jennifer Stenglein is a research scientist at the Wisconsin DNR. Earlier, we talked with Jonathan Pauly and Ben Zuckerberg from UW-Madison's Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. We have a link, by the way, to Snapshot Wisconsin. Find it at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.